Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We were joined in the first hour of the show by Dr. George T. Cody, who is the Executive Director of the American Task Force for Lebanon. You can read a very special report on that website at atfl.org entitled, A Million Unexploded Cluster Bomblets, The Deadly Legacy of Israel's Assault on Lebanon. There are so many implications to this story that, of course, I'll be mentioning a few things here in the next hour where I'm just doing some solo news analysis. And then Mark Glenn will be with us from both Crescent and Cross and the American Free Press at 9 o'clock in the morning Central Time to join me for a 1 hour of conversation up through 10 o'clock Central Time in regard to this situation with the cluster bomblets, as well as many other things that Mark has been studying and researching. In regard to a series of projects that he works on every day, both for the American Free Press as well as for Crescent and Cross. But suffice it to say that in regard to Dr. Cody's appearance this morning, I thought he did an outstanding job of basically giving us an overview of the serious character of this problem. We're talking about anywhere from 1.2 to 4 million of these cluster bomblets residing in South Lebanon, that these bomblets were dropped from airplanes, also fired into South Lebanon by rockets and artillery, and I think it's absolutely key. And Mark Glenn mentioned this the other day on this show, that the United Nations has estimated that Israel fired 90% of these munitions in the last 48 to 72 hours of the conflict when they knew that a ceasefire was imminent. This has monstrous politications, it seems to me, in regard to assessing Israel's role in this whole thing. And in regard to assessing their ongoing policy, not simply in Lebanon, South Lebanon, but also what they've been doing in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip as well. Also, some other things have come up in regard to my conversation with Dr. Cody in the first hour. It's absolutely significant, I think, that Ephraim Snay, the deputy undersecretary of defense for Israel, made a statement on April the 10th that the Israeli government was, in some sense of the word, apologetic for having fired these cluster bombs into South Lebanon. This doesn't change the fact, of course, that this is exactly what Israel has done in this particular circumstance. And Ephraim Snay's remarks to the effect that Israel was, in some sense of the word, apologetic over having done this is contradicted, in my judgment, by Israel's absolute refusal up to this point to give these bombing site coordinates to the people who actually have to clear these fields. Presumably, if those bombing site coordinates for these cluster bombs were turned over, which according to Dr. Cody, they can be very easily, it would make the process of cleaning up southern Lebanon an easier task, not an easy one, but an easier one, and that Israel's failure to comply with this is an indication that Ephraim Snay's apology of April the 10th is in fact a very lame apology. Regardless of what his own personal intentions are, it is very clear that the government of Israel, up to now at least, has absolutely no intention of cooperating at all with anyone in regard to this whole issue of what they did in the last 72 hours of the conflict in southern Lebanon, as well as what they continue to do in obstructing legitimate attempts to get these fields cleared in order that innocent people's lives might be spared. Something else that comes up in regard to this, of course, is the whole question of what this has done to the economy of South Lebanon. It was very, very key to me to read in Dr. Cody's report that 70% of South Lebanon's economy is based on agriculture, mostly tobacco, olives, bananas, citrus fruit, and melons. Farmers can't tend their fields because the bombing and shelling have destroyed crops. And they can't plant spring crops because the fields and orchards are still contaminated by unexploded cluster bombs. The effects of this are going to be ongoing, folks, not simply in terms of ordnance accidents, but the inability of Lebanon to produce food. This is Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Lick Broadcasting Network. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
In In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famine, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret society, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world is an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com. Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest. Start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years. With no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program, a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
To you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our guest in the first hour of the show is Dr. George T. Cody, Ph.D., who is the Executive Director of the American Task Force for Lebanon. You can find that website at atfl.org. And one of the most important things on that website is this report on these Israeli cluster bombs in southern Lebanon that's entitled "A Million Unexploded Bomblets, the Deadly Legacy of Israel's Assault on Lebanon." At the bottom of that page is information on how to sign the petition online in regard to protesting Israel's policy in that part of the world as it relates to these cluster bombs. That will be well worth your time. You know, as I look at some of the things that Cody was saying in the first hour of the show, again, I think that his coverage of this topic of the cluster bombs is absolutely excellent in regard to giving us a bird's eye view as to the time frame in which Israel dropped these munitions. The fact that there is an unexplained disconnect between the alleged concerns of IDF Chief of Staff Dan Halutz at the time about utilizing these cluster bombs in a massive fashion in civilian populated areas in South Lebanon and what his IDF ended up doing. Haaretz has reported upon this disconnect in November 20th, 2006. That whole question to who knew what and who issued the orders to utilize these cluster bombs and why is one that needs to be unpacked and is not likely to be unpacked for all the obvious reasons, where the National Security Establishment of Israel and the government and national security establishments of the United States routinely seem to escape real comprehensive scrutiny, either domestically or otherwise, when it comes to situations like this one. That is the larger political context in which we need to understand what has happened here with this cluster bomblet situation, which, in my view, is an extension of the whole problem with the United States' support of Israel going back to the 1947-1948 timeframe. Some of the things we talked about on the show with a number of people who were very knowledgeable Middle Eastern experts begins to get into a series of things that are routinely never discussed in American corporate media for all the obvious reasons. The Deir Yassin tragedy is something that is routinely never discussed. The activities of Begin and Yitzhak Shamir in regard to the Stern Gang and the Irgun are routinely never discussed. And obviously the various things that have gone on with the government of Israel in these last 60 years or so are routinely kept out of the corporate media, including the Levon affair and a series of other things that have happened that indicate that the whole question of the Zionist state of Israel is one that continues to present a very vexing political problem for the United States. That's something else that came up in the course of my conversation with Dr. Cody this morning. It is interesting, on the one hand, to see the sponsorship of these bills in the Senate and the House that is designed to get a handle on this cluster bomb situation, at the same time that some of the people, including Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, who are in sponsorship of these bills, are nonetheless very strongly linked in political support and connection to the government of Israel and to the Israeli lobby in this country. That is a contradiction in terms, it seems to me, in regard to trying to get to the real root of this problem, which goes well beyond the specific issue of Israel's utilization of these cluster bomblets in South Lebanon to the much larger question of the totality of Israel's policies in the Middle East generally and Palestine specifically, and also the role of the Israeli government through neoconservatives in the United States in promoting America's involvement in the war in Iraq, as well as all of this talk about a preemptive war being launched against Iran. Certainly when we look at Israeli policy in its totality, it seems to me that the cluster bomblet question in South Lebanon cannot be divorced from the macrocosmic picture of what Israel has been up to in that part of the world in all these last 60 years. And until we look at this whole thing more comprehensively, it seems to me that the type of thing is simply going to go on. One other thing came up in my conversation with Dr. Cody as he was speaking, and again, I think he did an outstanding job of laying out for us some of the most basic facts that we needed this cluster bomb tragedy in South Lebanon. One is this, and I didn't really get into this with him. We had an hour to cover what we could. Where is the American media on this? Folks, once again, we have a situation where the national media of the United States is overwhelmingly under the control of people who have Jewish backgrounds and very close linkages to the government of Israel and to the Jewish lobby worldwide. That can be the only reason why this cluster bomblet issue has not received more attention in the mainstream American press. I have seen very little of anything on this, both during the Israeli assault on Lebanon as well as in the aftermath of that situation. That silence continues. And because that silence continues, there's really no chance, in my view, that there will be a real groundswell of protest in this country in regard to what Israel has done. And because the lack of information will guarantee that there will not be a groundswell of protest, you're sure that the vast majority of United States senators and the vast majority of people in the House of Representatives and their individual congressional districts will hear next to nothing or actually nothing from their constituents in regard to this tragic situation that does not simply involve what happened in Lebanon and ongoingly involves the survivability of people there who continue to be hurt and killed by these cluster bombs, as well as the much wider implications of this for the destruction of food production capability in South Lebanon. But we're also dealing once more with the fact that the fingerprints of the United States are all over this situation. Dr. Cody did mention, of course, in his report, which you can find at atfl.org, that about 75% of the bomblets that Israel used in civilian areas in Lebanon are models made in the United States. If you look at the pictures that accompany this caption, you'll see something called an M42, an M43, a BLU-18B, an MK-118, a BLU-26B, and a BLU-63B. I know next to nothing about these individual versions of these cluster bomblets. What I do know about this issue is largely from public sources like Dr. Cody's. Suffice it to say that he has indicated he would like to send me definitive information on the specific American defense contractors that have been involved in the production of these bomblets. This is something that I'd like to examine on a closer basis on this show. I'd also like to bring up more specifically the whole process whereby Israel routinely gets whatever it wants from the United States Congress. Who approved the transfer of these cluster bomblets from the United States to Israel? Where are the money trails? Where are the political associations? What are the implications of this for our overall situation as we evaluate American foreign policy in the Middle East? This is the larger question, once again, that again surrounds this cluster bomblet issue. It's not just the cluster bombs. It's not simply the whole question of Lebanon. But there is a much larger picture emerging here in regard to our situation with Israel that is not going to go away. And as an example of this, let's turn to a very interesting story today in the Jerusalem Post. Have you seen it? The Jerusalem Post is duly noting Hillary Clinton's statements that the U.S. might have to confront Iran. This comes to us from the Jerusalem Post and from their Washington correspondent, Hillary Leila Krieger, and it is as follows. Democratic presidential candidate and New York Senator Hillary Clinton said that it might be necessary for America to confront Iran militarily, addressing that possibility more deeply than any of the other presidential candidates who spoke this week to the National Jewish Democratic Council. Clinton first said that the U.S. should be engaging directly with Iran to foil any effort to gain nuclear weapons, faulted the Bush administration for, quote-unquote, considerably narrowing the options available to America in countering Iran. Still, she said, all avenues should be explored since, quote, if we do have to take offensive military action against Iran, it would be far better if the rest of the world saw it as a position of last resort, not first resort, because the effect and consequences will be global, unquote. Other candidates who addressed the NJDC only went as far as saying that, quote, no option should be taken off the table, unquote, when it came to thwarting Iran's nuclear ambitions. All of the major Democratic presidential contenders appeared at the three-day conference. Clinton received the most time and applause. She hit on the importance of the U.S.-Israel relationship and the need to recover the three Israeli soldiers kidnapped last summer by Hamas and Hezbollah. She devoted most of her address to domestic issues popular with Jewish Democrats, such as education, health care, and the separation of church and state. She also told the response to an audience question that her husband would serve as an international envoy to rebuild goodwill Americans around the world if she were elected. New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, who spoke after Clinton, also suggested that he would use a famous former statesman as an envoy in his administration. In Richardson's case, he was proposing former Secretary of State James Baker to serve as a permanent Middle East envoy, a position Richardson would revive should he win the presidency. Baker is a Republican who served under former President George Herbert Walker Bush. Quote, there has to be bipartisanship foreign policy, unquote, Richardson told press. He also said economic and military aid to Israel should be increased, and that, quote, the cornerstone of my foreign policy in the Middle East would be a strong relationship with Israel, unquote. Folks, I don't think it takes a PhD in rocket science to determine that this gets at the crux of the issue in regard to why Israel continues to get whatever it wants, why Israel continues to get away with whatever it wants. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back. We'll be back with Mark Glenn at 9 a.m. of the American Free Press and Crescent and Cross. Stay tuned.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly.
Personally, I'm doing all that I can to stop a continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled W3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
All right, employee, listen up. Our group health insurance premium just went up again. In fact, it's doubled in the last 4 years, and now we've been forced to try something new. So we're increasing the annual deductible from $500 to $2,500. Okay, cut the moaning. The good news is you'll all still only have to pay your regular $500 deductible. The company is installing a new health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA plan, that will pay up to $2,000 in benefit only to those employees who have deductible expenses. This new HRA plan is saving us a lot of money.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
We're back. This is Mark Dancos America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our guest in the first hour of the show is Dr. George T. Cody of the American Task Force for Lebanon. A number of interesting things to say about this whole issue of cluster bomblets in South Lebanon that have been dropped by Israel. We'll be taking a look at that story a little bit later on, again with Mark Glenn of the American Free Press and Crescent Cross. Mark's going to join me at 9 o'clock this morning, Central Time, to chat about this, as well as a series of other issues he thinks are particularly important to us as we look at the last week and as we also try to look ahead. Getting back to this story of Hillary Clinton talking to the U.S., having to confront Iran, or that we might have to confront Iran, it seems to me, as I was mentioning before the last commercial break, that this is the larger context in which we need to see what has happened to the United States. Folks, we are no longer an independent nation. We are a part of a globalist cabal that is trying to control and is very successfully trying to control our political structure, our news media, our economy, our foreign policy. we need to understand this and to understand that there is an inextricable link between this new world order and the Jewish lobby in the United States and the Israeli lobby generally. I can't help but come to that conclusion. I think all of the evidence supports it. And it goes back as well to the whole biblical story in the New Testament as to the great struggle between Jesus and the Pharisees and the Sadducees, which culminates presumably in what we are told once again by the Apostle John in the Apocalypse, when in the second and third chapters of that book, talking to the churches of Smyrna and Philadelphia, a warning is repeated that we are to beware of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. What does that mean? I think Andrew Carrington Hitchcock goes a long way toward unpacking that for us in his new book, The Synagogue of Satan. And as we see this whole folding in history right now, as far as the United States is concerned, folks, we are seeing a leadership that is bought and paid for in both of the major political parties. Giuliani and McCain and Romney are singing off the same page and utilizing the same script as Clinton, Obama, and Edwards are on this whole subject of the Jewish lobby in this country and our support for Israel internationally. And in the case of Hillary Clinton, it's obvious that as a campaign strategy, she believes that to get the inside track on the on the Democratic nomination, that she has to sound more militaristic on this issue of Israel than any of the other candidates who have done their own obeisance before IPAC and before the National Jewish Democratic Council Conference. Hillary Clinton just has put the foot to the floor in regard to emphasizing the fact that if she is elected, she will be under the direct control, under the direct aegis of the Jewish lobby in this country, and under the aegis of the and control of the Israeli government in Tel Aviv in regard to anything that goes on that involves either the domestic or foreign policy of the United States. Hillary Clinton said on Tuesday, according to the Jerusalem Post, that it might be necessary for us, the United States, to confront Iran directly. Folks, we have been examining this issue for weeks on this show. Presumably, some of the other very fine RBN hosts have been taking a look at this as well. Why are we confronting Iran militarily? We have not confronted India or Pakistan militarily when it came to their own acquisition of nuclear power that was utilized for military purposes. When it comes to Israel, we are the leading military power in that part of the world in regard to nuclear capability, chemical weapons capability, and biological weaponry. Why are we not confronting Israel in regard to bringing their program under the scrutiny of the world and under the scrutiny of the international community, under the scrutiny of the United States government, under the scrutiny of the American news media? It's very clear why this discrepancy exists. And as we look at this discrepancy, we are in a position where, once again, we may well find ourselves in a wide war in the Middle East that could escalate into a full globalized version of World War III, simply because of the desires of the government of Israel and Tel Aviv and the desires of their backers and agents of influence in this country. I think this is bad policy all the way around, but even aside from the fact that it's horrible policy, it says volumes about who really controls this country. And thus far, it ain't us. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. George T. Cody is with us in the first hour representing the American Task Force for Lebanon. Mark Glenn will be with us at the end. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Americans already realize our nation is in deep trouble. Nishal Edition Hard Copy Literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide. A cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or idaho-observer.com.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain worth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Rep Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the Task Force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
House America coming to you live
from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We were joined in the first hour of the show by Dr. George T. Cody, C-O-D-Y. He represents the American Task Force for Lebanon. You can find that website, tfl.org. I think the most important thing on that site for purposes of today's discussion and broadcast is the whole question of Israel's dropping of somewhere between 1.2 million and 4 million cluster bomblets in southern Lebanon in the final stages of that conflict. And certainly as you look at that whole question of final stages, it should not go unnoticed that Israel did this in the last 72 hours of the conflict in that country, knowing that a ceasefire was imminent. That's something that we'll take up with Mark Glenn, of course, among other things, at 9 o'clock this morning, Central Time. Chris here at RBN reminds me that there's another very, very fine site where you can get more information on cluster bomblets as well as many other things, the Federation of American Scientists. If you go to FAS.org, get that information. And I have looked that site, haven't looked at it in recent weeks, and need to go back to it again. That's the Federation of American Scientists at FAS.org. By the way, you can support the Republic Broadcasting Network ongoingly by giving us a call at 1-800-724-2719 or contacting us on the World Wide Web at www.republicbroadcasting.org. That's 1-800-724-2719 or republicbroadcasting.org to send us your gifts to the extent that you're financially able to do so. Folks, we need your support if we're going to continue this ongoing attempt to get around the controlled efforts of corporate American minions. The American Free Press as well could use your support in the way of additional subscriptions. We try to keep the word of Mark Glenn and the words of Michael Collins Piper and Willis Carto and Jim Tucker and some of the other fine people at AFP in the front of what's going on in American journalism. If you listen to the broadcasts of the Republic Broadcasting Network or if you read the American Free Press, it becomes very clear that the things we talk about and write about are a contrast to the sort of thing that you're going to get in controlled media. It's absolutely essential that this effort continue because the people that are in the forefront of this are doing so at great personal cost and at sometimes a great personal risk in order that we might have a semblance of free discussion, a semblance of the dissemination of ideas while there's yet time to do it. And in that regard, there are some things that have appeared in even the corporate press in recent days that suggest that the window of time for you and me to be discussing things on a free and open basis in our society may be closing. What's going to happen if the same administration that has given us the USA Patriot Act 1 and the Military Commissions Act of 2006 suddenly discovers a reason, ostensibly, to go to war with Iran? I can just guarantee you that they will really batten down the hatch in regard to further restrictions on your First Amendment rights and mine. It's virtually guaranteeable that this will continue against the backdrop of a much wider war that will be couched in terms of patriotism, couched in terms of the national security interest, couched in terms of good guys and bad guys in this Manichaean worldview that, of course, Mr. Bush is very fond of perpetrating. The only way that we can fight this is through alternative media, and that's where RBN becomes essential in this process. You can find us again at republicbroadcasting.org or at 1-800-724-2719. You can have Aaron Russo's new DVD, America, Freedom to Fascism, for $19.95, $4.95 shipping and handling, by utilizing those same contact points, republicbroadcasting.org or 1-800-724-2719. If you have a question today, either for me or for Mark Glenn when he comes on the show, you can call at 1-800-313-9443. That call-in number again is 1-800-313-9443. Back then to our analysis of Hillary Clinton's statements before the National Jewish Democratic Council. You know, there are so many things that we could speak of in this regard. It's really difficult to know where to end. You know, I can well imagine, for example, that if I was running for president of the United States, and I freely admit that that's a very laughable concept, none of my listeners need worry that I entertain such hallucinogenic notions. But for the sake of argument, if I was running for president of the United States and was asked to speak before the National Jewish Democratic Council, along with all of the other presidential candidates of a major party, I think maybe the best statement that I could make in regard to my candidacy, both before that council as well as before the American people, would be not to appear in that format, not to appear in that forum. Simply to say, you know, the rest of the candidates in this dog and pony show can come before your council. They can all say the same thing. They can all be reading off the same page and the same script in order that they might receive the money from the people who are controlling the political process in this country, but I'm not playing that game. Wouldn't that be refreshing? We haven't seen Clinton or Obama or Edwards talking that way. We haven't seen McCain, Giuliani, and Romney talking that way. And for all of the obvious reasons, they're all in on the take. They are all controlled by the same people when it comes to these kinds of issues. They are all receiving or will be receiving from those sources. And folks, when you look at this, we are talking about less than 2% of the American population that has an absolute stranglehold on political money, that has an absolute stranglehold on the news media, that has an absolute stranglehold in so many respects on the national security establishment of this country. I would like to see a formal discussion of the real connections between our own intelligence agencies and Israel being brought to the forefront of conversation in this country. I would like to see the relationship between certain American defense contractors and Israel being brought to the fore in conversation in this country. You know, some days ago, the Wall Street Journal had a very interesting story talking about the fact that there was competition going on for a satellite, a global surveillance satellite for the United States. On the one, we have Lockheed, competing for this contract. Lockheed, of course, competes for all kinds of contracts and has been expanding its tentacles for a long time now. On the other side of the aisle was the Northrop Company. And Northrop, in its attempt to gain this contract, had enlisted a partnership with an Israeli defense contractor in order to try and receive this special bid in regard to this global surveillance system for the United States. Why is the government of Israel directly involved with an American defense contractor in helping that defense contractor, in this case Northrop, gain American taxpayers' money for the construction of a global surveillance satellite? I presume it will have Israel as a full partner in this in regard to the technology, in regard to the profits, and in regard to the utilization of the technologies provided by such a satellite for Israel's own purposes. You can connect the dots, I think, very, very clearly in regard to why this is so and why this is just the tip of the iceberg in regard to this whole situation. You know, one of the other things that comes to the fore in my thinking is that we've had several weather warfare experts on this show in past times. Jerry Smith comes to mind, and Scott Stevens as well. One of the things in Jerry Smith's book that I have noted in the back is an appendix where there is a listing of patents that have been granted by the U.S. government in regard to a lot of different projects that have been approved for research and funding and so forth. The government of Israel appears in a number of cases in those patents as being a direct or indirect participant in this applications process when it comes to weather warfare and the research of the manipulation of weather for political and economic military purposes. This is something that should be delved into in a far more comprehensive way, in my view. And if any of the weather warfare guys are out there listening to this, I would like to see one of you take this on specifically as a research project to look at Israel specifically in regard to their involvement in weather warfare research, and the extent to which the Israeli defense and scientific communities are involved in this with the United States government. I think that that would make for a very, very interesting reading. And have time to do it this morning. I doubt that we will before Mark Glenn comes on at 9 o'clock. I want to look at a story that appeared on Michael Rivero's website, whatreallyhappened.com, that goes a long way toward explaining just how deep these tentacles run in regard to the role of Israeli companies and Israeli-affiliated individuals in every sector of our lives, including the telecommunications industry. We'll be watching that one in the days ahead. Again, when it comes to the weather warfare guys, I would like to see someone take on this project of researching specifically Israel's connection to these weather warfare projects and the extent to which there is cooperation between the government of Israel and the government of the United States and some of these private foundations when it comes to the development of these weather warfare capabilities. This again would get at the bottom of who really controls the political, economic, and foreign policy of this country, and I think that it points especially in one direction. So I've mentioned today in analyzing this Jerusalem Post article on Hillary Clinton that I think it would be refreshing to see a major presidential candidate refusing to speak before one of these Jewish gatherings, in this case on Jewish Democratic Council. I think that you could really distinguish yourself in a field of candidates if you simply said, hey, I believe in free ideas. Somebody else wants to appear there, that's fine. But because of the nature of the game being played, I'm going to abstain from appearing because I think by abstaining, I will be saying something about my own desire to completely cut off my relationship with the Jewish lobby that will set me apart from all of my competitors. That might be a very, very interesting campaign strategy on the part of an honest candidate. Obviously, you would also be pilloried in the mainstream news media for having done that. You would automatically be committing suicide in regard to receiving any corporate money, and the list just goes on and on. But that would be fun to see someone finally stand up and say to these guys, hey, look, other people can participate in this dog and pony show, much to their own personal benefit, but I'm going to take a different road. Hillary Clinton, by the way, we were getting into this earlier, goes on to say in this piece in the Jerusalem Post that she faults the Bush administration for considerably narrowing the options available to America in countering Iran. You know, I have to really wonder just what this woman is talking about. How can she say that the Bush administration is narrowing its options in regard to countering Iran, when in fact there is only one option that I believe Mr. Bush is considering, and it's the same option that Hillary Clinton is now promoting before the National Jewish Democratic Council, and that is a war, and a war that involves the United States taking offensive military action against Iran on behalf of Israel, where the government and military of the United States serves as a surrogate for Israeli interests. Clinton says that all avenues should be explored since, quote, if we do have to take offensive military action against Iran, it would be far better if the rest of the world saw it as a position of last resort, not first resort, because the effect and consequences will be global. In the first place, it's very, very clear, Hillary, that when you examine what is happening with Jewish neoconservative influence in American foreign policy, that for such people who influence Mr. Bush and influence the national security establishment of the United States and the American intelligence community, that these are the people that influence all of the major presidential candidates in both parties, including you. And when you look at it, becomes very, very clear that to the extent that these Jewish neocons control the foreign policy of this country, they are urging this attack against Iran as a position of first resort. Not only that, but what kind of an attack are we talking about here? Folks, Hillary Clinton says that the effect and consequences of such an attack will be global. Absolutely, they'll be global. She has that down correctly. We will be in a third world war at that point. We will have the war of civilizations that the Jewish neoconservatives want us to have. We will be involved in a full-blown global conflict that involves all of the Islamic countries, from Somalia to Indonesia, that presumably an American preemptive strike against Iran will cause us to be the leading ogre in the world when it comes to both Shiite and Sunni Islam. And this will be a conflict that will define the United States for the rest of its existence in world history, which could be for the next 5 minutes or so if we take the kinds of actions that Hillary Clinton is urging on us here. But she's absolutely correct when she says the effect and consequences of such an American offensive military action against Iran will be global. And folks, it seems to me that we're talking about a situation once more where our mainstream politicians are urging us to begin a third world war. This war is avoidable. This war is unnecessary. This war is being urged upon us by a Zionist lobby that sees its own interest as being the only interest that is paramount in the world, where nobody else has a say or an interest in anything. In regard, if it involves killing thousands, even millions of people, in the interest of Jewish neocons and in the interest of the government of Israel, that's precisely what these people want to happen. Hillary Clinton talks about Bush considerably narrowing the options available to America. The fact of the matter is that Hillary Clinton is on the same page as George Bush on this subject, that there should be an offensive military action taken against Iran. And in regard to that, Dr. Michael Chosadovsky's research at globalresearch.ca is absolutely paramount in underscoring just how diabolical this is. Dr. Chosadovsky some time ago was writing about Tyrant, T-I-R-A-N-N-T, which is a military acronym for Theater Iran Near Term, Tehrant. In that regard, there is a Con Plan 8022. I wonder if Hillary Clinton has seen Con Plan 8022, because basically it represents a plan that has come to us from CENTCOM, now headed by Admiral William Fallon. And this Con Plan 8022 deliberately advocates and sanctions the utilization of tactical nuclear weapons against Iran. Hillary Clinton thinks Bush is considerably narrowing the options. It's just considering the one option that Mrs. Clinton is as well, and that is engaging in an illegal, unconstitutional, highly draconian attack against Iran that can and quite conceivably will involve the utilization of tactical nuclear weapons. Don't believe that one, folks? Go to Michael Chosadovsky's research at Global CA, and you'll see something called Presidential National Security Directive 35, NSPD 35. What is National Security Presidential Directive 35? Boiled down to its essential core essence, it is the President of the United States authorizing the utilization of nuclear weapons, utilizing their operations potentially against Iran. There is, for example, a conventional explosive device, the BLU-113. What the National Security Presidential Directive 35 does, however, according to Dr. Chosadovsky, is to take a new device, the B6111, which is the nuclear version of the BLU-113, and to bring that into the Tehrant doctrine, the Con Plan 8022 doctrine, to strike Iran with nuclear weapons. This is part of an explicit presidential directive, National Security Presidential Directive 35, that has been issued. It's out there, folks. It's official in regard to a so-called executive order. And this indicates, of course, that Mr. Bush is flirting with this kind of an incredibly dangerous apocalyptic scenario, that Hillary Clinton is right in there with him and trying to gain the inside track among these super hawks that want to start a war that is not in the national security interest of the United States and that involves the taking of thousands, even millions of lives, and that virtually guarantees a level of political and military blowback against this country that will be absolutely incalculable. This is where Hillary Clinton wants to take us, folks. This is where presumably Obama and Edwards want to take us, although they are a little more restrained in their rhetoric than Mrs. Clinton. Their agenda is also very clear. Now, if we look at this whole issue of Iran, it's absolutely understandable that as we engage in this presidential candidate hysteria in regard to this subject, that there is something else that needs to be underscored. Who has the final say on whether or not we attack Iran. As far as the Constitution of this country is concerned, that's the Congress of the United States, folks. Do you hear any of these presidential contenders on either side of the aisle talking about the things that we're talking about this morning? Do we hear any of these presidential contenders talking about Israeli control of American foreign policy? Do we hear any of the talking about bringing Israel nuclear and biological and chemical programs under international inspection? Do we hear any of them talking about this National Security Presidential Directive 5 and what it really means in conjunction with Conplan 8022? This is stuff that is straight out of Dr. Strangelove, folks, and yet none of the major contenders are talking about it. Why? I'm going to suggest it's because they're all on the same page, and because this horrible, draconian, unnecessary, reckless policy, which is about to be implemented, is going to bring about a third world war unless God intervenes. And that third world war is, again, a position of first resort, not last resort, Mrs. Clinton. It is a policy of first resort when it comes to the Likud Party of Israel, when it comes to the Israeli defense and intelligence establishments, when it comes to the Jewish neoconservatives in the United States that want to see this happen, and when it comes to the American presidential candidates, including the incumbent, who want to see it happen because of what their masters have in effect told them. This is absolutely scary. Needs to be watched very closely in the days ahead. And for those of you who want to take time out from the NBA playoffs or the beginning of the Major League Baseball season to think about something that involves the survivability of this planet and the survivability of the United States in any conventional sense, it is time to weigh in with your senators and your congressmen and congresswoman. It takes a phone call. It takes a letter. If it's done in isolation, it has no effect. But if hundreds of people listening to this podcast will begin this process, if they will show their family members and friends the evidence and ask them to act with a simple phone call or a two- or three-sentence note on the Internet, perhaps, just potentially, it might have some impact. Maybe it won't, but we've got to try. And in regard to this whole situation, as we look at the passivity of the American public in regard to this enveloping storm that's just over the horizon, it's absolutely terrifying. By the way, Hillary Clinton a while back was talking about all of these terrible things in Palestinian educational textbooks when it comes to Israel. This was a shtick that she was providing before one of the other Jewish groups that she was speaking from and in front of in recent months. Hillary Clinton did not go on, of course, to discuss the fact that American educational textbooks routinely are all controlled in regard to not presenting the Palestinian side of the Middle Eastern question or providing the American public with concrete information regarding terroristic acts of Israel since 1946, 1947, and 1948. Now, of course, she's talking about the necessity potentially of taking offensive military action against Iran without considering other options and without considering what the United States and Israel have done both in Mesopotamia and Palestine, potentially in Iran, that will produce this third world war. When we talk about Hillary Clinton, there's something else that becomes absolutely noticeable. In regard to our conversation this morning with George T. Cody of the American Task Force for Lebanon, Dr. Cody, of course, was talking about the 1.2 to 4 million cluster bomblets that Israel fired into southern Lebanon in the last 72 hours of that conflict before withdrawal. Where is Hillary Clinton on this issue of cluster bombs? Have you heard her talk about it? If she has, I have not seen any coverage on it in the mainstream press. Where do Obama and Edwards stand on this subject? Where do Giuliani and McCain stand on this subject of Israeli cluster bomblets in South Lebanon? There is a great conspiracy of silence in regard to this, folks. And as you go to Breaking All the Rules News and see our link up there to the American Task Force for Lebanon, there's a photograph that is taken off of the American Task Force for Lebanon website that is on the front page of EATR, which shows a young boy, looks to me like he's 8 or 9 years old, and he's missing a leg. He is an actual victim of one of these cluster bomblets. There presumably will be other children like him in the days ahead, just as there will be men and women who will also be injured by these cluster bomblets. We're also talking about a slow, writhing future death for South Lebanon as a result of the food production crisis that has been engendered by the dropping of these millions of bomblets into the agricultural heart of southern Lebanon. Where are the American presidential contenders in this regard? They're absolutely nowhere to be found. And one thing I think is absolutely clear, and that is that when we go to the American Task Force for Lebanon website and start looking at the pictures of these cluster bombs, it should not escape anyone's notice that 5% of these bomblets that Israel used in these civilian areas in Lebanon are models that have been made in the United States. And when information is eventually forwarded to me as to who the defense contractors are who have made these bomblets, it will then be interesting to try and trace the history, if we can do it, how this weaponry ultimately made its way from the United States to Israel. That's a very, very significant story because it has ongoing political implications for the larger blowback that is coming against American foreign policy in the Middle East. As Israel continues to engage in these outrages, it has not escaped public attention that the fingerprints of this country are all over this circumstance. What does this mean for the days ahead? Are we in an uncontrollable war that simply cannot be stopped? This is Mark Anthos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Mark Glenn of Press and American Free Press at right around 9 o'clock this morning. Stay tuned.